Monday, March 4th. It's good to see everybody here this morning. Spring is in the air. Kind of hard to believe. Item number two on our agenda is approval of the minutes from the January 2nd meeting.
Move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
We have a motion to approve and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Let me do say that Councilmember Whitley is out of the country on a trip currently, so it's just three of us today. Item three is public comments. If you'd like to make a public comment, please come forward 2.5 minutes by ordinance.
Hello, Daniel Brownstein, 1391 Downsbury Drive. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. I'm here to talk about item 4B, which is the coyotes. And I ask that this be placed on the agenda for my learning as well. The situation is I've been contacted by residents in different areas of the town, including, you know, from the old village all the way up to north of Carolina Park, with the notion that there seems to be an uptick in either the number of coyotes or just sort of their prevalence around town. And so I thought it would be good if we discussed this and got some information from our staff about some of the different options, if there are any, for coyote control, especially in the context of the incident on Benning Road and some of the issues over on Sullivan's Island. So thank you so much for taking this up this morning.
Thank you, Dan. Anyone else? If there are none, we will close public comment. Item four, police matters. Employee years of service recognition, Chief Arnold.
Good morning, Mayor, committee members. This time I'd like to ask Sergeant Bradley Strode to come forward. This morning we have the opportunity to recognize Sergeant Brad Strode for 15 years of service. He joined the police department in March of 2009 as a patrol officer, served for a significant period of time as a field training officer, and has been promoted up to the ranks. He's also been supervisor of the quarter, officer of the year, community outreach award. He is a defensive tactics instructor, which I believe you're in the middle of teaching the class. He stopped to come over here, longtime member, member of the SWAT team. So just a tremendous supervisor, very well respected by his troops, and can't say enough positive about it. Can't wait to see 10 more years at least.
Great. Thank you very much for your service. We appreciate it. And we do look forward to 10 more.
Officer Cleveland German, if you'd come forward. There he is. This one's a little bit month behind. We were unable to have him come before you all. But he started in February of 2009. 2019, I'm sorry. I had to put my glasses on. Sorry about that. Get older. He's a member of the Mobile Field Force, also a defensive tactics instructor, helps out with recruiting, and just a tremendous informal leader within his team, and also very well respected. And so thank you for 5 years of service, and look forward to many more.
Thank you very much for your service.
Carl, is he related to
all right. Last but certainly not least is Heather Cumby. So, can't overstate the importance of our animal control folks within the department. And Heather's been with us since March of 2019. I don't think I've ever seen this young woman without a smile on her face. She's always cheerful and willing to help. Doesn't matter when the officers call her, day, night, weekends. She's always willing to answer and share her knowledge with the officers on how to proceed. Has a tremendous working relationship with the other area law enforcement agencies and their animal control. They always help each other out. And, you know, it's that willingness to jump in and be a team player and help that is just a joy to watch. So thank you very much.
Is there another? I missed it. That's all right.
And Heather will be back up here in just a minute to okay. talk about coyotes. Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. At least on that.
At least on that.
And thank you, Heather. We appreciate it very much. So that concludes item 4A. Item 4B is review and discussion of Mount Pleasant coyote population. Chief.
I'd like to ask Lieutenant Smetana, who's our special operations lieutenant and supervisor of control, and Officer Heather Cumby to come up here. They're going to do a very brief PowerPoint presentation on coyotes for you, and then we'll answer any questions you might have.
Matt, good to see you this morning.
Good morning.
I just hit the button.
Is that right? Cool. Good morning. So I did ask ACO Cumby to come assist me because she is more of the expert with this than I am. But I did put together the PowerPoint for y'all to kind of educate a little bit, get the idea of what, you know, what the coyotes are and why we're, you know, what we can do with them and what we can't do with them.
Is that mic on? We're not hearing much.
How about now? Hear me?
Yeah. Put it towards you.
I'm bringing it to
you. There you go.
All right. So this coyote, you know, the difference between this and the dog, they're a little bit smaller, some like the bigger dogs, but they could be misinterpreted as a dog, especially they can be out during the day, so you will see them a little bit during early morning hours or some of the early evening. So healthy coyotes, they are dangerous to interact with because they're not aggressive, but they're more, they can get around quicker. Let's see. So whenever there is an issue with a coyote, the issue is just mainly they're being seen. There has been some instances where there's issue with like cats, like when their cats are being fed and stuff, but it's mainly just sightings. So we did refer with like DNR, you know, how do they handle it? How do some of the other agencies handle it? DNR's practice is to refer people to a wildlife removal company, which has also been what we have done also in the past. So that's what we continue to recommend because when they are trapped, they are hard to trap. If they do get trapped, they have to be killed. They can't be they can't repopulate them somewhere else. They can't be moved. And then along with the DNR, so if we were to do anything on our end as far as trying to, you know, control them in Mount Pleasant, we're looking at probably getting permits, licensing. We're going to need a lot more people to help with the, because when you set out traps, you can't just set a trap. You got to come back and you got to be able to monitor that. A lot of hunters, when they do set traps, they'll use cameras. They'll use like a wireless system. So the cage traps don't usually work unless the coyote's hungry. Unfortunately, they're usually not hungry around here. They get fed by the people feeding the cats. They get fed by the cats. So it's going to be fairly ineffective with the cage traps.
Is there another type of trap?
There's a foot trap or a snare trap. They are usually what we consider the best for trapping a coyote. But unfortunately, with the snare trap comes this. So you're going to catch cats, dogs, pets, raccoons, and it's not always just going to grab a foot. It's going to grab a cat. You know, it's going to grab them by their body, their neck, their head. you know, and in this case, and if it does catch a cat or dog or something like that, and we can't get back to it fast enough, you know, it might sit there. There's a chance that they could start, depends on how anxious that animal might be, they might start chewing on their leg, try to get out of the trap. Their situation can change for them while they're in the trap, because if we don't get back to them in time, then the coyote might get to them quicker. Mm-hmm. They now become food for the animal. And then also with it around the neck, it could strangle themselves. You want to talk about some of the trapping?
Yes. So currently when we trap like cats, we don't, if the weather's not good, if it's hot, cold, raining, we won't trap because it's not safe to leave the animal in there. And if we can't get back to it in a reasonable time, we check the traps every few hours to allow them a chance to go to it, but we don't like monitor them because they're in a safe and closed space. We don't trap after 10 feet or 10 a.m. That's due to rules for the shelter. I don't know what the rules would be as far as DNR, when and when we can and cannot. They said that would all come with the permit. And we don't trap when we're not here. So Fridays, we don't trap late in the afternoon. We don't trap on the weekends. And it's just a revolving door with the coyotes. If you're basically, after talking to DNR, if we're going to trap them, you're going to have to trap consistently to make a dent in the population, and it's still going to just be a revolving door. Same kind of with the feral cats. We do the exact same thing. It's a revolving door with them.
Can we ask a few questions right here before we move on, or do you want to move on and then we ask?
No, you're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, just if I may, committee members, so if we catch coyote, we're not DNR. DNR has legal authority, is that right, Mr. Pagliarini, over wildlife? Okay. So a trapped coyote has to become a dead coyote. All right. And just for public info, and this might not be pleasant, but how are those coyotes euthanized?
They're shot.
They're shot.
Yes, sir.
Okay. While they're in the trap?
I didn't actually ask that question. I would assume so, because that's going to be the safest versus touching them. Because they're dangerous to handle, like anything that's a predatory animal is,
right.
Really. I didn't ask that question though. They
okay.
Have to be dispatched, and you know, rehabbers or the trappers also shoot them.
Okay. So do we set our own traps, our town traps, and catch coyotes, or are you talking about other traps?
So I'm just talking about when I'm trapping for, like, domestic animals.
Okay.
Which I have never caught a coyote in our traps.
That was my question. What do we do if we catch a coyote?
No, I've
never caught one.
No, sir.
Okay.
I've never caught a fox in our traps, minus a drop trap, but I was actively trying to catch that one. So they just don't go in traps. Not the cage traps.
Okay.
They're too suspicious of them.
So if a commercial trapper catches a coyote, is that coyote taken to DNR?
No, sir. The permit allows them to dispatch them.
Okay. Any other questions before we... I mean, we got more of this presentation, but...
Yeah, well, I can wait till the end of the presentation.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just wanted, while we were on that, to get clear.
Yeah, there's not much else with it anyway that I've got here, but... you know, we talked with the wildlife removal companies, you know, spoke with them, like, how do y'all handle this? What is your opinion on catching coyotes? And what's one of the biggest things was you could catch every coyote in town, and the next month you're going to have just as many, if not more.
Right.
It's a never-ending battle. It's because they're pack-oriented. As soon as that one pack leaves, they're going to be back. So... Let's see. So these are some of the snare traps that have, you know, look them up, see how they're set up. As you can see, some are kind of like on the ground. If they step on it, catch them. Others, it'll just loop around their neck. But that's, and there was some videos. It doesn't kill them or anything like that. It just kind of snags them, and then it's kind of, they're there. They're trying to get away, so they're going to be in, very injured when you do find them, because they're going to try to get out of that trap as much as they can. Countries such as the UK are outlawing snare traps altogether because for that reason, because it's a very inhumane way of trapping an animal because it could injure them so badly. And that's all I have for that.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead and take that picture down for now, then, or the video down, if you will.
Can I just jump in here real quick?
Go ahead, Chief.
Just want to point out, all the pictures you saw, that was not Mount Pleasant.
Okay.
I know. Back up, I mean, we have coyote sightings, but I don't think we have any photographs of coyotes. And the prevalence, they track when we have a sighting or something like that. And we really don't have that many calls for service involving coyotes. We checked the consolidated dispatch. There's really not that many in the last 2 years. But what will happen oftentimes is something very sensational or exciting will be shown on social media, and it will drive more response. And people will hear the coyotes, and they start calling us more and more. They've been here for as long as I've been here in Mount Pleasant. We've had coyotes. I think we'll continue to have coyotes. So I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that those photographs weren't in Mount Pleasant. Happy to answer your questions.
Well, one of the questions and observations, Chief, I know when you and I worked together, we had a really good educational component. Is that still being done where we can get that out to our citizens, talk about what to do when you encounter? Because to your point, sir, you're absolutely right. They're here now. They're going to be here. DES, DNR is responsible, but they're going to deal with the private companies. So for the immediate response, you know, letting our public know what to do when they see them, how to deal with them. Right now, I think breeding season is going on right now. And that's one of the biggest things where you can start seeing more, hearing more coyotes. And I know we showed something how they'll hunt singly, but in reality, our citizens need to know that a lot of times that one coyote will entice your pet to follow it back into the woods where the pack's waiting on them. So I think if we can get more education out to our citizens and understand, just like our alligators, you're getting ready to get calls with alligators, Chief, if you haven't already gotten them. So I just think the making sure we really social media or whatever we did before, and I'm sure you are, sir. So thank you. Talk about that if you will.
Certainly. Last month we had a social media campaign where we pushed like I said, something became very visible on social media. It was driving more. We did an educational campaign. We will continue to do that. One of the biggest issues is, as I understand it, are people feeding and attracting the animals. The same thing with alligators, where they will end up doing this kind of stuff, and it just makes the problem that much worse. But we have been doing an educational campaign. We push it out townwide and police department, social media, and we'll continue to do so.
You know, I think just to encourage our residents to be mindful of your pets. You know, there's cats that roam around, be responsible. I mean, even little dogs in your backyard, the hawks and eagles that are out there can be just a big problem. So thank you again for making sure that education comes out.
And like,
thank you.
Same, our position is the same with alligators. You know, if there's a coyote living under somebody's deck or house and it's like an immediate threat to human life, we will take care of it. But hearing a coyote in the woods, it's been our position that we don't go after those coyotes.
Okay. If y'all stay put for just a second, Mr. Pagliarini, if you'll just give us a brief legal overview, and then I've got a follow-up.
Yes, sir. Thank you. The chief handles the operational aspects of it. I've posted above the legal requirements, and as you all are veterans of town council, you understand that when the state preempts something in the area, that leaves us very little, if anything, we can do from a legal standpoint. And the key issue to understand is that wild game are property of the state. So I'd be hard pressed to come up with any legislation that we could effectively implement that would assist. This is primarily an operational question. You'll see the listing of state statutes related to hunting and trapping. You have the permit, you have the license, that can be done. As the chief said, there are extraordinary circumstances where the department can step in. I would also add that on public property, we certainly have the right there, but on private property, this is primarily the responsibility falls on the property owner to bring in a company to get a permit and to deal with control and eradication in accordance with state law. So that's my brief summary.
Okay. Question for y'all, and I don't have this study handy. I'm sure it could be found. It was government funded in another state where I lived 25, 30 years ago, working for a member of Congress. They funded a sheriff's deputy to go out to, I believe it was Wyoming, and study about coyote population control. And I remember from that study that they said, if you trap them, remove them, hunt them, poison them, anything like that, that genetically they start producing more and you end up with more coyotes than you started with. Is that still, you know, that might have been for another part of the country, and that might have, that was decades ago, but is that still the understanding today?
I don't know if it is, but I will tell you, I was over at the shelter at SPCA, and we were talking about, they were doing a presentation on feral cat population, and that's part of the tactic that's used with them is a spayed neuter. If they catch cats, I mean, that's why they spayed neuter, so they don't repopulate. Maybe a similar type of situation that doesn't surprise me. The species is going to want to survive.
Right. And the other thing was, so we're really not talking about eradication. We're talking about limiting things that would draw coyotes to your property, to your pets. I'm a composter. I think about, you know, food that I might put in there, if that might attract. I don't think that's a big issue with coyotes, but we have to think in those terms. Don't feed pets outdoors. I'm sure there's a long list if there's some we haven't gone over.
Common sense.
Don't let cats roam, especially.
Cats roaming, feeding cats outside. Some people feed their dogs outside. Those are like the two most that are going to draw them in.
Okay. Do lights keep coyotes away? If you have motion lights and they're in your yard and they come on, it doesn't spook them? Okay.
No, not in my experience. From videos people have shown me, from citizens, that doesn't really spook them off. They're so used to it. They see it every day. You know, they don't have anywhere to go, so they see the houses, people, the dogs, lights, cars. It doesn't scare them anymore. They're suspicious of all of it, but they're not going to, like, run off and flee because a light pops on. They're just not from my experience with the videos that I've seen.
And other than a rabid coyote, normally coyotes are not prone to attack humans.
No, when I talked to DNR, I can't remember the exact year. I have it written down, but I didn't bring it in here. It was in the early 2000s that they had the first incident with a coyote and a person.
Wow.
The first one. And they've had very minimal since, and typically they're rabid or they're starved, like they're just desperate. If that's what the DNR agent that's in charge of coyotes explained to me. He also said that he's willing to come down here and do like a presentation at like a council meeting to educate town people that want to come.
Okay.
So, just if that's something
y'all
are interested in.
Okay. Can
the thing that I'm interested in is the state law, and it appears that the largest number of complaints you'll be getting are from neighborhoods that have open space near and around them to allow coyotes to live in the wild. And if a neighborhood comes to you with a complaint in one of those areas, the fact that they could, as a neighborhood association, if you will, hire a private company to take care of the issue as best they could. Is that something that you suggest, if you will,
yes, sir,
to the neighborhood?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we suggest hiring a company or asking their HOA if they can. Those are the two things we suggest people will just avoid them.
No. Yeah, that seems to be the best answer that you can provide.
Are those companies licensed, regulated? Is there a way to find, is there like a bulletin board somewhere that tells you how to find them?
So one of the links I put in here is just a list of trappers that are allowed to trap, and it tells you what they can and can't trap. DNR has that list on their website. Honestly, I tell people to Google trappers and just call them and just go down the list, look at reviews, make your decision based off what you feel is right. But that's typically what I tell people to do, is just Google, find a trapper that works for them and that can trap coyotes or raccoons or whatever it is, the animal that they're trying to have trapped.
Okay.
We don't like to steal. Yeah. To one company.
No, I agree. Sure. But DNR does have a list.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Anything else that we need to hear for the good of the public? Or?
No, sir.
Committee?
No, sir.
Thank you all. Thank you. Appreciate it. This brings us to item 4C, discussion and possible action regarding an ordinance to amend chapter 140 titled Abandoned Watercraft.
So, Lieutenant Smetana and Officer Morrell from Charleston City, their maritime unit, are going to run through some information about this proposed ordinance. Recently, Charleston City amended their ordinance, and if we don't follow their lead, the boats will come and they will park over here in mass. So it's in response to that, but I support it. I think it's a good good thing for us to do.
Yeah, so the Folly Beach initially started this with, they had a big problem with their abandoned vessels, mostly sailboats, and they redid their ordinance and started a program over there. And then Charleston City looked at that ordinance, redid their ordinance and started their program. The goal is for all the local municipalities to adjust our ordinances to reflect each other so that we can all be on the same page, and this will hopefully keep it from these folks just moving around and trying to illegally moor in places, because we do end up with problems where the boats end up sinking. They become a problem. They wash it up into the marshes areas. We recently had one that we had to get out of off of Wando. We worked with another company that helped the town out with that to get that out of there. So it's definitely becoming a big issue. And Officer Merrill here will explain a little more about how it's affected them. They started theirs February 1st. It went into effect. And he can kind of give you an idea of what they're doing, what it affects, and what has happened since.
Thank you for coming, Officer Merrill. Good to see you.
Glad to be here. Thank you. I'm Officer Mike Merrill, Charleston Police Harbor Patrol. As he said, Folly enacted the ordinance back prior to when the state made the law that enabled local municipalities and local governments from creating their own permit system. So they fought for a while to get it with the state. During the time of them fighting it, and then shortly after, we ended up with, I guess, about 15 or so vessels, watercraft, from their area that ended up in our jurisdiction or run our jurisdictional lines down by Saul Legree, which is our border between us and county between Folly Beach. So it just pushed the problem into our jurisdiction. We knew that was going to happen, but it took us a while to get everything done. So when the state passed that law in 2021, we kind of ground on it. We finally got it done in 2023, and the online permit process finally went into effect February 1st, as he said. So between that time of when it was enacted last year and February 1st, we already had, just from that, enough people finding out about it, starting to move boats around, starting to rectify their different illegal issues with their boats. Since February 1st, we had 66 on anchor, 66 boats on anchor. So about 60 owners that we've been dealing with. The very first person we met with, which we went with DNR because of some registration titling issues he had on one of the boats. The very first one, he moved two of his boats to Goat Island. That was his solution, was, well, I'll just go to Goat Island because that's not in the city, right? So, no, it's not. So one of them ended up on Island 71 Dock on Isle of Palms, right across the river, and then he pushed up behind Goat Island. Since the first question these guys usually ask is, this is just city, right? This isn't DNR. I said, no, it's just city. They said, okay, where do I need to go? And that's usually their first question. So we don't tell them where they can go. We say, if you find a place you want to put it, we will tell you if that's city of Charleston or not. But that is always, as you might imagine, someone's first question is where I have to go to not get everything legal on my boat. So, of course, then we're addressing the illegalities with the boats, which is usually related documentation, registration, et cetera. But we have not had any issues with people who are taking care of their boats. Most of those people already have either insurance on their boat, a plan of what to do with a storm, whether it's an agreement with the local boatyard or something like that, to take their boat or pull it out. The only issues we've had are people that already have other issues with their boat and are typically in danger of becoming derelict or abandoned. So we were kind of looking at this, not as much from requiring permit side, but trying to get ahead instead of being reactive. Like he said, when a boat sinks, You know, we found the cost is anywhere from sunk a boat anywhere from $10,000 to $25,000 on up in more extreme cases, which, you know, the city has not provided a large budget for us to do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we've relied on local partnerships with like Wounded Nature and some other organizations who've done those for us free of cost to the taxpayers. So this is our way of getting ahead of that and trying to not just identify problems by issuing a ticket for not having a registration, and then they still decide, well, I'll never get a registration on the boat. It's cheaper for me to pay the $233 and just continue to live on this boat. This is a way of us getting ahead of that and actually denying them a permit, making every day an additional violation, requiring some other things like storm plans, waste management plans if they live on the boat instead of dumping buckets in the river, things like that, to obtain the permit. And so far, we've already had several have obtained insurance, and they've provided that to me. One has already pulled his boat out, said now's a good time to work on this boat so I can figure it out and try to get insurance on it and all this. We've had a couple already move out of our jurisdiction. So I'm glad y'all are getting on this, because, you know, I reached out to a couple other agencies too, and I kind of told them, you know, sorry to say, but you snooze, you lose. You know, if you're the last agency to get this, if the state's not pursuing this as avidly as local jurisdictions are, you're going to end up the jurisdiction with 66 of my, you know, or 50 or so of my 66, all of Mount Pleasants, all of Folly Beaches are going to end up in whatever jurisdiction's left. And that's sad to say, but I strongly support you guys doing this. Of course, you're right across the river. And if I want to be selfish, anything that becomes your problem in a windstorm, it's back my problem again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm glad y'all are pursuing this. I hope y'all do pursue it. And I'd like to be any assistance I can to try to get this going. If you have any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, sir.
Other, are we going to talk about what we currently have in place for abandoned boats? Because Mount Pleasant has, they had something in place. I know, especially the ones that were in the waterways, to travel apart, that were falling apart. We had a process where we tagged them. Is that still a viable option for us, or we need to bolster that more? So, and if you were
so that's,
talking about that a lot.
Yes, that's part of the existing ordinance is addressing abandoned boats.
Right.
This addresses boats that have been moored or anchored for more than 15 days and having license and permit requirements from them. So we drafted the ordinance amendment in front of you that adds section 140.16, which is on page 5 of the document in front of you. It largely mirrors the city of Charleston's ordinance. So again, if you're going to have your boat moored or anchored for more than 15 days, you have to apply with the police department for a license. Have to provide proof of ownership, insurance, federal and state, you know, licensing documents. Like you mentioned, if you're going to be living on the boat, you have to have a sewage treatment plan, or how you're going to handle the sewage that you're creating on the boat. And then again, has different requirements for your mooring of the boat. And like you mentioned, it largely is predicated on the state statute, which is shown in front of you, which allows for municipalities to pass these types of regulations for boats that have been that are going to be anchored for more than 15 days within their jurisdictional limits.
So just
to be clear, this is Section A on page 5.
It's all of 140.16 is the entire section is what the licensing requirements. So it starts with what it applies to, and then goes down into what is required to obtain a permit from the police department, what needs to be given to the police department in order to obtain one, the permit costs, which is $15, and then further down, maintaining the watercraft and make sure it doesn't fall into derelict.
Okay, and this is, as you see in Section A, I just want to be clear, any vessel that remains moored or anchored or otherwise located in any 1 5-mile radius of the waters of Mount Pleasant for more than 14 days, right?
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Okay. That would include being tied up at our dock, at our public dock?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the only way that boat is...
Yeah, that's the town dock. We enforce that. Like, there's right. No date. That's, you can only be there from, like, 5 a.m. till midnight. 12 to 5 is when that park is closed.
Right.
So, and I've put signs out there. I think the wind's blowing them down or people are stealing them. I got new signs getting made. But we have had signage out there, and it has helped with keeping the boat. So, yeah, the town dock, we don't allow that at all.
Right.
Yeah.
But the old trick in boating is, I know this from experience, is my engine broke down or whatever, I'll move it tomorrow, or the parts come in, or the guy's coming to fix it, and they end up staying 2, 3, 4 days because it's broken, right?
Yeah. And
I'm not saying you're not enforcing. I'm just saying this is up and down the coast.
They do that quite a bit. I've bluffed them a few times with, like, you know, you don't get this thing out of here, you're getting fined tomorrow.
Right.
Which is not a thing, but, and they're usually gone. Like, because it's, because they're lying.
Okay.
So usually, you know, we get them out of there quick.
Great.
And like I said, with the signage, they don't even try it anymore. Like, they used to try it all the time without the signs, but we're having the signs up. Okay. It hadn't even been, the gentleman that lives across the waterway from there hadn't even called. As far as I know, I haven't got a phone call. So we've been taking care of it.
So it seems like the area that sort of became a catamaran anchorage was right off the Yorktown, you know, sort of in the current lee of the marina there. And I noticed that there were a lot of them there. They're not there now. They must be seasonal, but a lot of them were sailing cats. And
I sent someone out there to go check on that. Like, why are they here? Because that wasn't a thing. And they were here because they said there was a storm further out that they was impeding their travel or whatever. But once we started going out there and checking on them and stuff, but most of them were in super good condition because they were the, you know,
these weren't derelict boats.
Yeah, these are high dollar sailboats.
So if you anchor there and you're on the boat, say you're making a passage down south, or they'll be going north here, you know, in April and May. If they stay anchored there for 14 days, they have to get a permit regardless.
That's what this is. Ordinance, it will, but right now, no, they don't have to do anything.
Okay,
that's where the issue is they can stay there as long as they can. And there's not a whole lot we can do about it.
Okay.
The biggest thing we try to do is just kind of keep the little channel there open for the cruise, Spirit Line cruises. But with them out there, as long as they're not blocking the channel, there's not a whole lot we can do.
Right. I think this sounds real good.
I do too. I happen to have been working with the city of Charleston after several hurricanes, and there were a number of vessels that were abandoned, and the hardest part was having a legal way to get them out of the water, and this will certainly help us in Mount Pleasant.
Great. So you want a recommendation from the committee to recommend these changes for first reading next Tuesday, right?
Yes, sir, and I have a couple more. There's a couple more additions to the ordinance. So we also, in the 2021 amendment, the General Assembly also provided a definition of floating structure. So these regulations and the abandoned boat regulations are not only going to apply to watercraft, but also to floating structures. Like, say, if somebody have a dock that they were to put out, floating dock in the middle of the channel or something like that,
right,
the same regulations would apply. So you'll see that throughout the amendment. And then the last bit we added here on the last page there is a section stating that it's the duty of the owner or the occupant of the boat to keep it clear of trash, keep it clean, free of litter, free of debris, and also to prevent that debris from going into the waterways and onto the land. So that adds a penalty for that, as well as preventing the structure or the dock or the watercraft from blocking, impeding traffic on the waterways. So Shim Creek, you can't pile your boats up that would prevent anybody from navigating down the creek.
Okay.
Did you put in here how many boats deep off the dock?
We didn't put how many. It just states that you can't block.
How many?
We think it's best not to put how many. That way it gives you all some more discretion as to, you know, maybe two larger boats would block rather than three. You know, that way it gives you some discretion as to when to enforce that.
Okay. Yeah, that it might work. It'll be a little tough because sometimes they get three deep, four deep, or like the pictures I had.
Right.
But just the way it's designed. But yeah, we could probably work with that.
That works for you?
Yeah. It's just, it has become like some of the pictures I had up there. It's, you know, as soon as they have some kind of event, like that one was a poker run from 2022. They're 7 deep off the water's edge. We have 2 boat landings on the other side of the Shem Creek Bridge, along with Sea Tow that stays out there. So if they have to respond to something, sometimes they become an emergency vessel as well, because we may need to get something out somewhere quick. So we need to be able to leave them have access. So As long as we have something, I think it'll help, because, you know, when we had, like, we were dealing with Chadwell with that one, because I went down to address the seven boats, and it was, I really had no teeth, and he knew it.
Well, I have a question or an observation, to your point, and maybe you can help me legally. Can we not designate an area showing where the channel is, where there's buoys on either side, something that kind of, have you got that line of demarcation, like, you cannot wrap past this, that may help us get past the two larger boats that would maybe blockade button channel where three smaller boats wouldn't. Is that a possibility? And I'll probably defer back to my two boat folks here. That's what I was curious about. Yeah.
There's a, I think the Coast Guard would have to have a lot of say in that.
Who would?
The Coast Guard.
Okay.
The other issue is if we put anything up, we're creating another obstacle.
Right.
Because of what happens is when they do line up like that, like with the other bigger boats, even our boat, a police boat, try to go down there and turn around, can't get turned around and come back out. But if we have anything kind of sticking up, like any kind of markers, we may create an additional
hazard.
Hazard. Sure. Yes.
Thank you for that insight. Yeah. I was just trying to think of something I could give right. our folks that help you looking for, but thank you for that.
Yeah,
I
appreciate it. Thought about that as well, like something you, to kind of mark. But it's just going to create more of a problem.
Could we have language in here that says that gives our officers discretion on what, where is it about impeding the, where is that? Impedes?
Yeah, one
blocks or impedes?
Correct. That's what the language proposed now does. So it, as long as it blocks or impede traffic going down a navigable waterway,
right,
and they have the ability to ticket that person who is blocking the traffic. So that the way we wrote it now is to give that discretion.
Again, okay.
There's larger boats that are blocking,
right,
several smaller boats. They can ticket those people.
Yeah, because three big sport fishers wrapped it up will take up more room than five, you know, outboards.
Absolutely. That was our
But if y'all see that it's impeding navigation there, even though Shem Creek itself, as we were talking the other day, is not a designated channel. So it's kind of murky. Yeah. Okay. So you got more?
That's all I
have. That's it?
Yes, okay. Sir.
Thank you. Any questions for them?
The one question I have, recently there was a party dock created or built for people to bring the boats to enjoy the afternoon on, serving drinks, etc. Where does this stop that kind of thing from happening?
So now that would fall under the definition of a floating structure, so it's subject to all the same regulations as a boat or as an abandoned vessel, so they would be now subject to all these regulations.
So that would cure that problem if we had it here in Mount Pleasant?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Anything for the officers?
No, sir.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate it. So, if there's a motion to recommend to council,
I'll move that we recommend to council the passage of this ordinance regarding watercraft and floating structures.
Okay. This would be proposed amendments to Chapter 140?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Proposed amendments to Chapter 140, titled Abandoned Watercraft. All right.
Yes, sir.
And a second. Any further discussion? All right. Yes, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Good job.
Item 5 is judicial matters. We have none. Item 6 is legal matters. Nothing there. Item 7 is to adjourn. This committee is adjourned. Thank you.
Right on schedule.
That's a lot. Thank you.